A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What a week it has been.
I can't take myself seriously right now.
Leave it on.
I am sitting in my apartment and I've been watching reruns of Schitt's Creek just because I love that show so much. And I've taken on a Moira. And maybe Caitlin will post it on Twitter when we release this pod. And the reason I'm doing this, people, is so that you get better sound quality.
We've heard, so we hear you. We don't have access to a professional studio. Some of our interviews are on Zoom. Some of them are across the room, socially distanced, with safety precautions taken in front of a bevy of microphones. And today it's under blankets.
I can't take myself seriously. But anyway, we're going to carry on. And we're going to do this because that's the person I am. And I do have a tequila in front of me.
Yep. It's very on brand for you, though. So this is a good time to check in. It is halfway through the bubble version of Roland Garros, the French Open.
Your favorite.
My favorite.
It is your favorite.
Maybe I'm starting to reconsider if it's my favorite tournament.
What's your favorite tournament?
I mean, usually it's the clay swing because it's like getting nice here in New York. It's so fun to watch that red clay happening in my early morning times, which is European afternoon. It makes you feel like anything is possible. I like clay court tennis. But I don't know if the French is my favorite slam anymore, just because I think this slam has been sort of
tainted
a little bit.
Why?
I don't know that this is the best possible iteration of the French Open, which is very tough to... It's a tough criticism to make just because they have all the odds stacked against them. The field is not complete. Ash Barty's not there, you know, trying to repeat.
Well, that's because she's out.
Naomi's didn't show up. I mean, I get it. Like, it's not the full force of the field that you normally get.
Well, Ash just decided to stay home and win the local golf championships at her club.
No big deal.
I mean, honestly, I've been asked that question in the last couple of weeks about why she's not going to the French and what do I think about it and all this. Listen, if there was one player that doesn't give a shit about taking an entire year off, seriously, it's Ash Barty.
Yeah.
I mean, because this is a girl who won almost $1 million the year that she decided to take 3 years away from the sport and wasn't even guaranteed that she was going to come back and play. And, you know, look, it was an unbelievable year last year, let's face it. She pretty much surprised the world, becoming world number one, winning the French Open, winning the WTA finals. And then, you know, she's that type of person that doesn't seek out the spotlight, doesn't care necessarily about the money. I mean, she made gobloads of money last year, probably like $15 million or something. So she'll be the first person to tell you, I'm just a basic Ippy girl, which means she's from Ipswich in Australia. And she's just a pretty basic kid. Like, she doesn't really want all the trappings of fame and a bigger house. She can buy a big house where she lives, trust me, on a golf course, and she's really happy doing that, playing golf, walking her dogs. I mean, having said that, it's pretty amazing that she didn't go back to the tournament that she won last year, but can I just say, like, if for longevity of someone like Ash Barty, it's probably the best thing that's happened to her, to be honest.
Schedule maintenance is, we see, increasingly important for the health and well-being and mental health for a lot of these players. You know?
Remember when Venus and Serena used to take off like tons of time in the year?
They got all sorts of shit for it.
They wouldn't go to Asia. They wouldn't go to Europe sometimes when, you know, the European swing was on at the end of the year. And everyone was like, I mean, they don't support the tour, blah, blah, blah. And I was one player that was like, who cares? Like, if it's going to mean that they are going to actually keep playing this sport for another 10 years. I mean, if you had said to them back then, oh, well, they don't support the tour and they don't do this and they don't do that. But here they are at 39, you know, 39 years of age, 38 years of age, still playing the tour. Now they're both 39 and 40, still yeah. playing the tour. Yeah, if I'd right. said to them at 25, they'd still be doing that. They'd think I was friggin' nuts. But the fact that we still had them for an extra 10 years is a lot of the reason is because they did take time away from the tour. So I think this will, actually affect a lot of players in a lot of different ways. I think a lot of players will see this opportunity that look, the ones that don't seek the spotlight, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? The ones that really don't need the spotlight.
They get rejuvenated when they can step back exactly. kind of thing. Yeah.
And the ones that don't freak out about not playing for 6 months or possibly a year.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not out here, you know, saying, hey, everybody take 6 months off. But if you really are at a point where you are mentally fried, take the time.
Sure.
Step away. You don't forget how to play. You don't forget how to be great. The thing that stops a lot of people from being really, really, really good is the mental side of tennis. And if it means stepping away to actually get rejuvenated and get the mindset to go hard for 10 months of the year, do it. Take the time away.
Well, I think what's interesting about this pandemic is we're all learning this, whether we're pro athletes or not, which is just, you know, taking time to be outside, be with our families, not be in an office. You know, I would be surprised if office culture came back to quote unquote normal, because in the here in the States, it's pretty normal, especially in New York, to brag about how busy you are, how overtaxed you are, how many people need your time. And that's a status symbol. If anything, it becomes sort of a way to humble brag. But the truth is, you know, we're all too busy. We're all too manic. And I think like we have not paid enough attention to, you know, slowing down and thinking about things. But going back to Ash Barty, because of today's result, Iga Swiatek from Poland, that extremely fun to watch team beating Simona Halep pretty routinely, Ash Barty is going to retain the number one ranking for through the end of the year anyway. So it didn't even matter for the ranking's sake that she didn't show up to defend.
Yeah, I mean, having said all that, I don't think she gave two, you know,
single fuck. Yeah.
I mean, you know, if someone said, oh, she dropped a three or whatever after the French because Halep won, or she would have been like, oh, okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. When's my tea time tomorrow? You know what I mean? Like, she just doesn't get too worried and too worked up about stuff like that. But having said that, 2020, nothing makes sense.
Nothing makes sense. So let's talk about some stuff that doesn't make sense, because we had a very funny and several riffs about some of the sportsmanship we've seen thus far at Roland Garros. And it's one of the things that you and I always debate. We haven't always agreed on some of the interpretations or some of the officiating in particular, or maybe some of the code of behavior that some of the players bring to the tournaments. My perspective, obviously, is having been an amateur player and playing in college, some of which I think is applicable.
Where cheating happens all the time.
Where cheating happens all the time. And I'm happy to tell you a story about how a non-officiated out-of-conference match against a player from the University of Pittsburgh nearly ended in a brawl that
no
I was
name.
Playing.
No name.
I don't remember this woman's name, but damn. I caught one of her serves in the middle of the box and stared her down. And I said, if you want to cheat, I'm going to call this out for the rest of the match. And it worked. But it was like, oh, God, do you have to make me do this?
Was there no umpire around that?
No, because it was an out-of-conference match. And so umpires were not required by NCAA rules. And so usually they would be provided and I would have appealed. But in this case, I had to do a little, you know, tit for tat.
No pun.
No pun intended. I'm not sure. Is there a pun in there? I don't know.
No, there's not. I heard tit and tat.
Sure. Tit and tat.
Couldn't help myself.
I want to start with one of the most insane tennis matches that has happened, I think, in several years that I've seen, but certainly in Roland Garros, which was the first round match between Sarah Errani and Kiki Bertens.
Is it Bertens or Bertens?
I think it's Bertens, because you get the Bertens Mertens.
But why do you
doubles.
Say Bertens?
Because I speak Dutch, obviously.
Oh, okay.
Haven't you drunkenly heard me speak Dutch?
Clearly not.
Yeah. Well, I only actually know one word in Dutch, and it's gezellig. Which
really?
Is
I know a couple. Dutch. Hot verdomme.
What's that mean?
It's not good.
Oh. Sure. I should have known.
Or dankjewel. That's thank you.
I do know that.
Alsjeblieft.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay, so
I mean, I'm on a roll.
Wow. Oh, boy. Somebody stop her, literally.
Yeah.
So can we talk about the Sarah Errani Kiki Bertens mm-hmm. match,
yeah.
however you pronounce her last name?
Yeah.
The last
Bertens.
20 minutes of this are some of the most insane match. I'm not going to say it was a good tennis match, but it was an incredibly captivating tennis match. It ends with Kiki saving several match points, Sarah Errani getting time violation after time violation for not being able to control her toss.
She had Tourette's of the service toss.
Oh God. Has anybody taken a look at her serve in the last several years? This is not new.
It's brutal.
Brutal. Yeah. What do you do with a player like that who can't get their toss up and serves an 87 mile an hour?
Listen, I'm not going to give her too much shit because I had a little bit of a issue through my career. Not a lot, but at times, the yips on the ball toss. The Anna Ivanovic, the
I've had it too. It's
terrible. Elena Dementieva.
You have a pin in your stomach walking up the
baseline. It's not fun. Before I played my first Wimbledon doubles final, was having a bit of a mild panic attack about it the night before. I mean, I would go to bed going, oh my God, please get your toss in the right spot. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And thankfully I was fine the next day. But yeah, so I can understand this to a certain degree. Nowhere near how bad it is for Sarah Rani. I never for one time in my career thought about serving underarm because I couldn't get the ball toss in the right place. The anxiety that she must feel is just out of this world. I don't know why she keeps playing just because of that. But, you know, God love her because she's actually done pretty well over the last couple of months getting a ranking back.
Yeah. She had to come through qualies and she made it. And she nearly beat Kiki after having several match points.
You didn't want to say her last name.
I don't want to say her last name because you're going to make fun of me. And you're going to sidetrack me for the incredibly on point thing I want to say, which is a continuation of this. Mm. So picture it. Here's Irani catching, bouncing, not serving the serve, time violation after time violation, causing her to lose a serve. Second serve is underhand. By the third set, Kiki is running in for drop shots that she's hitting off the second serve. So many times she's doing this that she starts full body cramping. Full body cramping. Have you ever had a full body cramp? I assume you have.
I have not had a full body cramp, but I've definitely had a cramp in my calf muscle. Not fun. I can't imagine what a full body cramp feels like because the one in my calf felt like somebody had literally shot me from 20 feet away.
Right.
Pearson, by the way, I just took a drink of tequila while you were telling me a story because my anxiety started to grow. So go on.
Just thinking about this. Mm-hmm. Yes. So Kiki pretends is involuntarily spasming. They're trading breaks because nobody can hold serve because Kiki is spasming with cramps. Irani cannot serve because of her toss. Nobody wants to win this thing. It's 8-all.
Well, no, they want to win so bad they can't even play.
Maybe.
One can't get the ball in play and the other one can't run to the ball.
Oh my God. So here we are. Then Sarah Irani starts making fun of Kiki Bertens, saying like essentially she's acting.
Just go with Kiki.
Whatever. Long story short, Kiki somehow ends up winning the match, collapses. Irani runs off the court without even tapping rackets, which has now become the customary thing to do instead of shaking hands.
Actually.
You don't like that. Come on.
Do you know how many times I would rather smash my opponent with a racket than touch them?
Yes, but you did.
I know. I mean, it took everything in me.
I'm going to ask you more about that. But don't you think there's something unique about tennis that you have to acknowledge your opponent at the net regardless of what's come before it?
After what I just watched in the hockey finals, go Tampa Bay Lightning. I just want to throw that in there. Sorry. It's like, you know, these guys beat the shit out of each other and they always shake hands after the
Yes, game. It is part of the parameters of sport that you acknowledge the opponent and it's nice if you can throw in a kind word.
Yep.
None of that happened. Irani runs off the court. Kiki pretends collapses onto the bench, weeps into her towel. You hear as she's leaving, going into the player tunnel, Irani screams, "Vaffanculo!" Which means...
go fuck yourself.
Mm-hmm. As the
Do you
trainer,
see how multilingual I am?
It's amazing. The trainer is bringing a wheelchair for Kiki to be wheeled off the court. I was like...
with the echo of "Vaffanculo" as you're walking off the court.
Swear to God. I mean, I had a hard time describing this to other people who hadn't seen it. There's so much going on there. Later in press, they both get asked about it, obviously have very conflicting accounts. What do you make of this? I mean, people say that Irani's been like acting like this for a while. You know, she got tagged for having a steroid.
In her pasta.
That she said was her mother's breast cancer medicine that fell into the tortelloni.
I can say without really worrying about any defamation lawsuit that I think that's got to be a load of shit.
I mean,
the fact that, Kiki Bertens is not known to do stuff like that. There's certain players in the locker room that are just like, holy cow, here we go again. Yastremska. Kiki Bertens, it's not going to be one of those people. And she wants to win that match. She's not going to pretend that she's like, you know, a lot of players do that because they want an excuse for losing.
Yeah. But if you're winning.
But you're winning. And, right. And she's not that doesn't want to lose that match. So she's just struggling. And a lot of times cramping does happen because you are also very nervous. And,
sure.
And you get anxiety and you're anxious. And I mean, one of the great cramp or body cramps I ever saw was Caroline Wozniacki at the WTA finals in Doha one year. And I remember I was standing courtside next to her, and I remember her looking literally into my eyes as I was standing on the court, like, and I was like, breathe, because she was just about, she knew she was. And the thing with cramping is people don't understand. It comes and goes.
Yeah.
Like sometimes you're like, wait, I'm fine. And then all of a sudden you move and then you feel like someone just shot you from 20 feet away again. So no, Kiki is not that type of person.
You saw the anguish on her face. I mean, she said it herself. She would have to be the world. She should quit tennis and start an acting career if that was, she was somehow able to pull that off as some sort of fictitious.
That was her comment in the press. I thought it was pretty funny.
And then Irani's like, she's fine. I just saw her in the cafe. And
yeah,
it's like, yeah, because cramps, once you get treated and you get potassium, you get stuff into your body. Anyway, speaking of Yastremska, she's another one we talked about a little bit. Diana Yastremska, the young Ukrainian, the really, really hard-hitting player coached priorly by Sasha Bayan before they very acrimoniously seemingly split up.
Just another firing for Sasha.
Oof, he's getting bounced from all sorts of players' boxes, huh?
Yes, he's getting bounced more than a Novak Djokovic pre-serve match situation.
I was wondering if that was going, and it paid off.
Yeah, did I pull it off?
You did.
Thanks.
Well done.
Yeah.
She takes medical timeouts at highly questionable times. I responded after the latest incident of this as a sort of obvious momentum killer. If you're going to take a medical timeout, you have to be like dragged off the court. You know what I mean? To me, it's like a soccer dive where you're like collapsing on the ground just to get a penalty kick and then you pop back up and, you know, run the length of the field. Is there some way to police this at all?
Sadly not. We have gone through this through the years over and over and over and over. We've had many people that take advantage of this. And, you know, Yastremska is one of these players that just has a locker room reputation of, when's it going to happen? Like, when is she going to take the timeout? Like, when is it going to happen? Obviously, if she's winning, it doesn't happen. If she's losing, or it's questioning when she is, you know, not playing at her best or something, you just wonder, when's it going to happen? And I mean, look, I want to say to her right now, if every single one of these has been legit, you are the most injury prone teenagers I've ever met in my whole life. I mean, come on, like, you got to get your shit together. But if it isn't, then you've got to get your shit together, because it just doesn't look good. It doesn't look good for the sport. You are losing respect left and right on the tour with players. And it's a shame, because she's a great young talent. And I hope that through the years, she will start learning that doesn't benefit her and it's not a good look. So, I mean, some players do it to take advantage of the system. Unfortunately, there is a lot of players that don't. There's a lot of Kika Burtons. There's a lot of, you know, myself. I think I took maybe 3 or 4 injury timeouts my entire career. I played 22 years. And one was because I pretty much broke my finger and I had someone come out and, like, literally tape it. I broke my wrist. Actually, I didn't even call the trainer on that one. I tore my quad. That was at Wimbledon. Like, the couple of times that I've called the trainers out, it's been a catastrophe, you know.
A dire situation.
To the point where the physios are like, wait, who's calling for the trainer? Renee Stubbs? Oh my God, get out there. It must be really bad. You know, and
get to the chopper.
Get the chopper. Pew, pew, pew. But, you know, there are certain players that you're just like, oh my God, this must be really bad.
Yeah.
Remember when Andrea Petkovic, like our buddy, like fell at the Australian Open. I was sitting there. I was like, oh no, this is bad. Oof. You know, so there are players that really need it, that
yeah.
genuinely really need to be taken care of, whether it be an injury or a twisted ankle or a pulled hamstring. I mean, I watched Anna Bogdan go down in Prague running for a ball up 5-1 in the first set. She was wheeled off the court. So there are a lot of players that need medical attention at that time, and maybe they can get through a match and maybe they can recover for the next match, and we should give them that opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, there are little shitheads on the tour, men's and women's, that do it to either have an excuse for mom or dad or the coach that, oh, look, I hurt myself, or they want an excuse for the press or not. And unfortunately, we're never going to be able to get rid of that, because the safety of the players comes first.
Well, that seems logical. Let me just ask you a question, though. Like, I personally, when we have disagreed about something, it's usually because you're understandably a little bit more sympathetic to the players, whereas I'm really, really, like, to me, growing up with rules and being a good sport was, to maybe to a fault.
Me too.
taught to me, like, don't ever smash your racket. Don't ever lose your temper on court. If you ever were to disrespect a line judge, anything like that, it was just, I had a coach who would yank me immediately. I did it twice, never happened again. So for me, like the Serena thing, you know, we had a slight difference of opinion about calling versus rules or rules, you know. So I'm saying, I guess, you know, there's obviously some gray area, but to me, I do wonder, because I think there are people who listen or watch a Yastremska medical timeout thing or a Rafa playing the clock thing, and they say, well, you know, if it's within the rules or if it's, you know, playing the sport and using all of your advantages, what's so bad about it? What's so bad about a player getting a terrible reputation, which Diana Yastremska certainly has, because as you said, she's either the most injury-prone teen you've ever seen or needs to get it together. But what's the downside? Like, what's the consequence she could face for not being a good sport?
What's the downside for them? Nothing other than losing the reputation of the players and people talking about them behind their backs. And I mean, there are just some players that didn't care. They used the rules to benefit themselves and they didn't care who they.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're taking advantage of or what it was doing to their reputation, they didn't care. And so for me, I could never do that because my reputation, I always wanted to look at myself in the mirror in 20 years' time and go, listen, I may have lost certain matches, I could have maybe used it, but I don't care.
But let me ask you a question. So this it seems like we're picking on the women. Don't worry, we'll get to the men. Another one was the Laura Siegmund double bounce down 1-5 set point to Kiki Mladenovic, the other Kiki, whose name I do have more of a handle on. Obvious
double
bounce.
Yeah, how can you say Mladenovic and not Burton's? But anyway,
because I think it's Bertens. I think it's Dutch. I think it's a Dutch pronunciation.
Okay. Well, maybe I'm wrong, and we're going to get people tweeting us after this.
Please tell us,
Caitlin. You, of course, are the smartest person in the room. Goodbye.
It's oftentimes that I'm proven wrong about these things, especially when it comes to my overconfidence in pronunciations. Truly. So, is that a call you make on yourself? To me, growing up, always, because the umpire doesn't always catch a double bounce. There's no VAR like they have in soccer. Video review isn't necessarily part of the culture of calling that call. In this case, Ava Atsaraki-Moore, who's great and one of like the legendary umpires, just didn't happen to see it. Maybe the body was blocking it. But upon review, Laura Siegmund very clearly did not make that drop shot. I argue if you're a player, there's no way you don't know. You always know, and you should always call it on yourself.
There's only one time that you may not know, and that's if you extend your arm out so far and your head is not looking at the ball at all, right? So you, or a dive. I mean, I've done that, right? Where I've dove for a ball. Is it dove or dived? Dive? Dove?
Dive? I actually don't know.
Oh, God. That's a miracle.
Please, let's just keep going.
Anyway, I'm going to say dove because it just sounds better.
It does.
Where I dove for a ball and you're not quite sure. Did you get under it? Did it hit the ground and then go over the net?
Right.
If you're not looking, right? If you're not looking. But when that double bounce happened with Siegmund, you know that's a double bounce. You know for a fact that that's a double bounce because it hits your racket on the strings.
Yeah.
Okay? When it hits the strings, you know it's a double bounce.
Otherwise,
okay?
It would hit the lip of the racket at the very bottom, yeah.
So Ava Asdarafi, to me, is the best umpire in the game. I'm shocked that she missed it. to be quite honest with you, because it wasn't that tough to see. I'm really surprised she missed it. But having said that, there's no way I take that point. No way I take that point. The only way, the only way I would take that point is if I saw somebody, if I saw my opponent do the exact same thing to me two games earlier, maybe, and I said, oh, you know what, you just did it to me, fuck you. But that is probably the only way that I would do that, just for retribution of like, you didn't call it on yourself, she missed it, so you know what, now we're square.
Yeah.
I would still probably find a hard time doing that because I was the type of person that would get so annoyed at the umpire for missing the call. I'd be like, maybe they called like 30, 40 or juice in that circumstance, juice. And I'd be like, no, you fucking idiot. You missed the call.
Yeah.
I'd be annoyed at the umpire because I just,
Yeah.
You know, listen, I had my fair share of yelling at umpires. So it was more about me wanting to prove them wrong.
Right.
Right. So I'd be like, you missed the call, you idiot.
Set.
You know, and I'd walk to my chair. And another reason is, you know that there are 16 cameras on you at that point. Once again, it comes down to locker room reputation.
Yeah.
Everybody knows for the rest of Laura Siegemann's life, she's still in the tournament, that she cheated and won that first set. Now, I'm not saying she would have won the match or lost the match, but I know for a fact she should have been down one set to love.
See, Kiki Bladenovic winning that first set 6-1, hard to imagine she loses that match.
Well,
I mean, we don't
she
know.
She did lose a match 6-1, 5-1 up at the US Open.
It's true. Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. And she did have several other set points in that first set.
Yeah, she had
but
six
I
set points.
I can relate to that so hard. Something going awry, your opponent doing something and just throwing you completely off your game, which I guess, you know, if you're a professional, that shouldn't happen. But yeah, Laura Siegemann, like, that's a stolen
that's,
point you received.
Yeah, that's
Come
bullshit.
On.
I
it's
mean,
bullshit.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, you do wonder, what if three games from now, the umpire misses the same call. I get it, all of that sort of stuff. But for me, as a player, you walk to the chair and you sit down and you accept the fact that you lost the first set. Because she lost the first set.
She lost the first set. You mentioned to me that there was a very similar instance that happened in your career with Jelena Dokic.
Yeah.
Tell me what happened. Dokic.
On the same court, actually.
No, really? French Open?
Yeah, French Open, center court, semifinal, the women's doubles. It was 2-1 in the first set. We were up a break, Lisa Raymond and myself. And it was literally 15-all. I mean, I remember it like it was yesterday. I hit Conchita Martinez, hit a return, and I had a high forehand volley, not one that I would normally just smack at my opponent's feet, point over, and because I poached. And instead, I hit it a little bit late, so I hit it a bit fat. And I knew as soon as I hit it, it was actually going to hit Jelena, like, because I always aim at my opponent's feet. Just for those people out there, that's a good place to aim.
Sure.
And play when you're poaching. And I hit it a bit late and I knew straight away it was going to hit her. And when I hit it, she started turning her back because she knew, oh boy, this is coming right at me. And when I hit it, I hit it fat and higher than I expected and it hit her in the back and it ricocheted off and it went out.
Hmm.
And the umpire said, love 15-30, or maybe it was the first point, love 15. And I looked at him and I said, no, that the ball hit her in the back and went out. And he said, I didn't see it, which I'm not going to give him too much shit because the angle may have looked a little bit weird.
Maybe I mean, same thing with Ava Moore. Like, Laura Siegemann's body could have been in the way of her visual field.
It happens, right?
But she could have and should have called
it. So I said to her, no, the ball hit her. And he said, well, I missed it. And then I said, Jelena. And keep in mind, Jelena and I at that point were really, I wouldn't say we were great friends, but we were friends. And I was somebody who always stuck up for her. Just read her book and you'll figure out why. I hit it and it went out. And she turned around to me. She would not look at me.
Mm-hmm.
And she turned around to me and I said, Jelena, the ball hit you. You need to tell him. And she looked at me and she waved her finger in my face and said, don't talk to me, talk to him.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh, you little fuck. I couldn't believe it because it was basically just she knew that he missed the call.
Mm-hmm.
She was not going to call it on herself. Maybe she was worried about getting beat by her dad after the match.
Lots of other things going on. But
I was so angry after that. It actually cost me the match because Lisa and I should have won that match. And it's a story I told on the air at ESPN when I tried to hit an opponent with a set point at the French Open. And Lisa and I, if I just hit a regular ball that I would have.
Oh, set point?
No, that point was early in the second set. But on match point, on set point of the first set, Lisa and I were winning comfortably at that point. I had an over. It's sort of semi-high ball, and I tried. That was an overhead, and I tried to hit Jelena with it. That was my own goal. My own goal, only goal, was to hit her. And of course, I had the whole line in my head. I was like, "Did that hit you? Did that one hit you?"
Okay.
Right? It was all set in my mind. And instead of hitting her, I actually missed the overhead. I shanked it and hit it out. I almost hit Conchita in the head, which Conchita was a really good friend of mine and still is. And I missed it. We lost the game, and then we ended up losing the set.
Yep. See, and but it's so stuck in your head, this whole thing. Did lose the set because of you were going for blood because you felt like you needed to punish her. And who says tennis isn't mental? It is 99% mental. But I do think, like, if you are
It was the biggest lesson I learned on a tennis court.
Don't let your rage blind your strategic thinking.
I only had one thought. I didn't. My thought wasn't, yeah, we're going to win this set. Let's put it to bed and win this match and be in the final.
I was like,
I'm going to fucking hit you and I'm going to teach you a lesson. No, yes. I taught myself a lesson, which I guess I did teach someone a lesson. Just wasn't the right person.
It was yourself. Let's talk about the men a little bit. Since this episode is all about sportsmanship, I'm calling it sportsmanship awards. Some notable jawing at umpires happening from Jack Sock. Jack Sock, man. I mean, I guess I'm glad he's back in main draws.
Just people know I just took another drink after that story.
You just needed to take it easy?
It's the only grandson I never won.
You have some great commemorative towels, though.
Yeah,
I can say having...
Take them.
Partaken out, just fuck them, just kidding. I'll burn them all. Jack Sock is back. He's got lots to say to umpires all the time about basically the Hawkeye or lack thereof on clay is a real contentious thing. Everyone says Hawkeye is not very accurate on clay, and so don't yearn for this technology that can't actually call balls on clay. Do you have an opinion about that?
What do you think my opinion is? If you listen to anything that came out of my mouth at the US Open, you know exactly what I think of this. I mean, get Hawkeye on every single court.
Yeah.
And here's the reason, Caitlin. Because on clay, as you know, when you clean the lines, sometimes the line doesn't get cleaned perfectly. A little bit of the brush makes a little bit of the line not look so... Is there clay there? Is there not? And then when you get a bounce that's really close to the line, is it touching the line? Is it not touching the line? Well, I'm not sure because that's the brush line. You know, there's too much ambiguity in that in itself. And I can tell you, there can be ball marks where you can get five players come over and be like, what do you think?
Yeah, it's
and different. Two of them will say it's in and three of them will say
no,
it's
you're
out.
Right. Ball marks seem so terribly
that
odd,
is
accurate.
And that is, in my opinion, too ambiguous and it is too subject to a human mistake, error, whatever you want. Now, there's going to be arguments to that because the player's going to be like, but look, but see this, but what about that, but the angle, the blah, blah. And that's happened to me so many times that I've had so many arguments with umpires. And, you know, the ball can hit the clay and the clay can, you know, push up a bit of clay against the line. So therefore it looks like it's out, but it really, anyway, my point is you can't argue with the fucking machine. Okay. So if you are a player that's ranked 150 in the world or number one in the world, that machine is calling the same thing.
Yeah. That's the argument for it, right? It's calibrated the same way. So if there's a margin for error, the same margin for error.
No arguments.
Everybody.
And
yeah.
And listen, there has been a couple of arguments where players like, I remember John Isner last year at Wimbledon was like, there's no way that ball's in or out or whatever it was. And everyone was like, we agree with you. Mm. And I've actually had it happen to me. In a mixed doubles match.
Meaning
at Wimbledon.
All the humans agree, but the machine is saying something else. Is that the example that you were referring to?
Literally, I'll never forget. I was playing mixed doubles. It was serve hit. It was a double fault. I could see it right off the racket. Oh, it's going to be a double. The angle of the ball hit. Linesman calls it out. Umpire doesn't say a word. I turn around, walk back. One of the opponents, not both, said, oh, challenge. And then the machine said it was in. I was like, there's no way that ball. I was standing on the line.
Yeah.
I can see that ball
so
better than anyone.
So there is margin for error.
There is margin
for
error. But it's going to be the same for everybody. And
that's a good point. Yeah.
No one needs to have this ambiguous bullshit on tennis anymore when we have the technology. Just use it.
And we wouldn't have lines people as Novak Djokovic seems to want.
The amount of fights I had on Twitter during the US Open about people like, you don't care about the linesmen. I'm like, listen, I'm sorry. For the linesmen, they're going to lose their jobs like at the Grand Slams and the big tournaments. But I'm sorry, when it comes to the difference between a player being in a possible in second round of a tournament that could change their careers and their lives, I don't give a shit about the linesmen at that point. I care about let's get these players are working their asses off to get it right. And I saw so many instances at the US Open where you were leaving up to the players on the main courts to get the call right on the biggest of circumstances. For example, just one that popped into my head, Jen Brady, court semifinals of the US Open, break point, hits a ball, back of the line, doesn't query it. That's a whole different story. Why she didn't do that.
Yeah,
but that ball was in.
Right.
It was break point. She's one of the best servers in the game. She'd just come back from being down 40 in the previous service game. What's to say she couldn't have gotten out of that service game? But instead, she didn't even query it, and the game was over, and then the match was over.
I mean, you're totally right.
Seriously? Yeah. We've got the technology telling us that ball is in, and you're saying because she didn't challenge, we're not going to get it right? It's just...
I remember vividly the Lina Agavrybanska semifinal at Wimbledon. Remember that? Ace.
Yeah.
Not called out. She doubles.
Yeah.
Set over.
Yeah.
That's the match.
Yeah.
Lina could have been in a final, probably would have won it and had three.
And she has said to me it's the biggest mistake of her career was not challenging that ball.
Right.
The reason she didn't want to do it is because she didn't want to interrupt her second serve. And any player would understand that thought process. Because, like, if I challenge and then it's out, and then I got to, like, wait 30 seconds and go away from my normal cadence of serving my second serve, and I still have a second serve and it's still set point. No, it was set.
Yeah.
It was over.
Over. Yeah, but you're right. It's impossible to wait for a call in between
serves.
You
cannot leave it up to players to make those decisions on balls that are that close to the line, to make a split-second decision when we already have the technology.
Well, that's the thing. One of the things that's really frustrating about a lot of sports, and I think I watch a lot of baseball, and I...
You do?
I really like baseball. I married a Yankees fan, so we watch a lot of baseball in our house. And also, I was a Montreal Expos fan up until we didn't have a team anymore, which, don't get me started, we should have, because it should have won the 96. They should have gone to the World Series. He said there were a player strike. It ruined the team.
Was that Moises Salou?
Yes. Exactly. Andres Galarraga. We had a great team that year. Raul Ibanez.
Poor Moises Salou. You see, isn't he the one of those Cubs that had that catch out in the outfield and it didn't get... And the Bartman caught it.
Oh, God. Is that right?
Yeah.
Moises Salou. And they, took the catch away because it was it should have been interference. Yeah. But it was... Yeah.
Poor old Steve Bartman. What a great documentary, by the way.
What I hate about baseball, and I love baseball, but what I hate about baseball is the strike zone is completely arbitrary.
Yeah.
And the ump is making up to players how well you jaw, the umpire, all of that affects the calls, right? There should be no room for interpretation. If the viewers at home have a more accurate view on whether a ball is a strike or a ball, or whether a tennis ball is in or out, then the players playing on the court, that is a failing.
Yep.
So I don't have anything against lines people, nor do I feel particularly passionate about
this.
Accurate calls, if you can tell at home that something is happening and it's more right than what's happening on the court or the baseball field, as it were, that's a problem.
It's like, you know, I don't want to take, I'm sorry for all the linesmen out there. I know that, you know, some.
It's an unpaid job.
I get it all. I'm really sorry. We do have to have linesmen to learn, like, because all the gold badge umpires have come through being linesmen.
Mm-hmm.
So we need that system to be able to get linesmen to become umpires, but there has to be a better way. And as far as I'm concerned, at the big tournaments, get it right, period.
Let's talk about something else involving sportsmanship, which doesn't have anything to do with lines or umpires or calls, but rather coaching from the stands. In one player's case, specifically, the ongoing dialogue that Stefanos Tsitsipas, who I love, has with his father, which clearly seems well beyond what is considered acceptable from interaction from a coach to a player standpoint. Other players complain about it. If anybody's watched any of his matches this year at the French Open, it's unmistakable because now there's no crowds. So all you hear is the squeaking of their feet, or in his matches, squeaking of feet and his dad.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah, it is nuts. Well, I do know, I have heard from a reliable source that some of the stuff out of his mouth is not super positive.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's necessarily a positive.
I actually think it hurts him. It doesn't help.
Well, I was going to play devil's advocate there by saying I don't know if it's a positive or negative because he does win a lot of matches. But in my opinion, it is without question a negative for him. I think a little bit of encouragement every now and again, maybe a little bit of something here and there. We all do it. I coach from the sideline. I mean, any coach that says they don't coach is full of shit. I actually think one of probably the only people that doesn't coach at all from the stands is literally Patrick Mouratoglou.
That's hilarious.
Which is hilarious. And like Serena barely looks at him for that reason. So I think it's hilarious that really this rule has been scrutinized so much since
because
what happened
of
to her.
Right. And it's clear she didn't even see him during that day.
Oh, no, she well, that's not the interpretation of the rule is if you're coaching and seeing coaching, doesn't matter if the player's looking
at
you.
Listen, I'm a rules are rules person, but in it's devil's advocate for that match, she wasn't even looking at him.
Yeah, so have a little bit of common sense on that one, but don't even get me started on that one. But yeah, look, the bottom line is you should allow coaching from the stands because as a coach, I can tell you, you can only tell your player so much.
Yeah.
Because if you tell them too much, it's paralysis by analysis. And they're just like, shut the fuck up. Like, let me think for myself. Once in a blue moon, you want to tell them maybe watch the serve out wide. Yeah. Keep hitting that backhand cross court. Okay, that's the way to play. That's the perfect point. Keep that going. Same, same, same. Or, you know, there are little things that you can say to a player that kind of makes sense to them where it's not overloading them. Mm-hmm. Same pattern. Great job. Keep hitting that serve, you know, oh, that's a good serve. Keep that one going. They're all little just
nudges in the right direction.
But like constant coaching like he does, that is not helpful to him in tough moments.
Clearly not. No, I mean, the Hamburg final that he lost was largely the dad left. He screamed at the dad to leave. The dad comes back. He starts losing again. It's like, I don't speak Greek, but whatever this dude is telling is Stefanos is not helpful. And also it brings up one of my like least favorite tropes, which is the parent coach.
Mm.
Ah, if you're a professional athlete at a certain point, don't you just want to say like, hey, thanks, usually dad, but also potentially mom. Thank you so much for getting me here. I hope you also enjoy the fruits of me being a successful athlete, which means I've now bought you a house and you're partaking of the upside of this. But now it's time for me to go my own way and get a professional coach.
When it's not healthy, it's pretty obvious. And I think that, you know, I think that there is a point where every one of these players needs to find a professional coach to help them through these moments. But look, there's also been some great player-coach relationships. I think Caroline Wozniacki, you know, has stated on many times that she didn't think that anyone could sort of understand her like her dad. And obviously they had a great relationship and she did incredibly well throughout her career. So there are certainly some coach, player, parent relationships that have done pretty well. But at some point, yeah, I do think it's much healthier for everybody that they step away and they get somebody that's not their parent, because it starts to affect their relationships. And it starts to affect, in my opinion, more than anything, I think that it really stops the player becoming socially more, just more mature.
Sure.
You know, and some of them, I mean, I think Marianne Bartoli like is a perfect example. Look, she did great with her dad. She won Wimbledon. Like, but I think it took her a long time once she was finished playing to finally get socially sort of
like find her own footing as an adult.
Exactly. And things like that, because you know, your father's around her all the time. He was around her all the time. And there's plenty like that I don't want to name over and over and over because.
Well, some of them are really well known. Some of them have names named after them. And other ones, like one of them that I was really happy to see wasn't around was Caroline Garcia. I don't think it's an accident that she's had a pretty good European clay swing.
Well, he was back at the French though, so.
Was he?
But she lost today, so.
She did lose today, but she had a very good tournament and I didn't see him in New York either.
I do think that's a perfect example of somebody that I think if she had a really great, I think she always had great results at Fed Cup. And one of the reasons was that
she had a different coach.
Amelie Maresma in the corner.
Yeah, totally.
So for me, I think that's a good example of somebody who could benefit by having someone just a little bit more, I don't want to say wiser, just a little bit more understanding of what it takes to be a great player.
Well, I also think having sat through a couple of Caroline Garcia matches with her agent, who I've become friendly with, she looks over at the dad after every point, win or lose. And you have to start wondering, she's got top five grand strokes.
A kill to coach her.
She's a great raw player. Talent. Serve is great. Mm. Hands are amazing. She's an accomplished doubles player. I mean, the whole game,
she's got it all.
She's got, like you can't deny the fact that her game is just so spectacular.
She's very uptight.
But I think that's why she's so uptight. I think she's used to being scrutinized after every single point, looking to her father for.
Well, I know because I've also been around her on the practice court quite a bit because I've had my players that I've coached that have practiced with her, and he's nonstop.
Yeah.
Like every single point, he's nonstop. And I'm, you know, look, he's gotten her to where she's gotten, which is, you know, formally in the top 10 in the world.
No, it's remarkable. Yeah.
But it's time to let go and let somebody take those reins. Anyway.
All right, let's end by giving out some sportsmanship awards.
Oh, okay.
Now and then, men's side, women's side. We can go into wheelchair. We can go into legends. We can go into doubles, specialists, anything you want. Juniors, best sports, worst sports. We can call out specifics. I want to give a shout out to Novak Djokovic, who, a lot of stuff aside, is always good about conceding points. We were talking about conceding points. Yeah. He's really good about that. If a call is missed, he'll give it to his opponent. I think that's really, really excellent.
Yeah.
And I think it speaks well of his respect, at least for other players.
When it comes to things like that on the tennis court, there's no doubt that Novak is up top of the list. Like I think the great champions are very aware of that. They also know that they're going to win every fucking match. So they're like, here you go, buddy. Here's your one point.
That was it. How do you feel now?
You ace me. Yeah. No, I'm joking, but well, kind of. Yeah. But he's always been great like that. There's no question. Worst on the men's side? God, I don't even know. There's been some classic situations of double bounces or the old hit the hair on match point at the US Open. Was it Ken Flack that happened?
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. I'm going way back. Yeah. I remember Daniel Nesta, I think, hit the net on a follow-through and a volley, and it was like a match point. It was like a huge point at the US Open. Oh, no. I think he ended up losing the point, losing the match or something. The women's side, best sport. Well, personally, I have to talk about Sam Stosur last year in Guangzhou when a ball hit her on the foot. And it was going out and it went and it hit her on the foot. And that's still not her point, but the way she handled it, she just kind of walked together. It was a 3-hour match. It was 6-5 in the third. She hit her opponent, Pera, hit a ball that was going out and it hit Sam in the foot. And she just like walked to the side, like no big deal. I'm like, oh my God, I'd kill myself if that happened to me. And she thankfully ended up winning the match. But like Sam's always been such a great sport.
No, she's a great sport.
Great sport. Ash Barty, like all the Aussies,
let's talk about Nick. Do we just say Nick is a bad sport or a good sport? I think Nick gives respect.
No, I think Nick's a great sport when it comes to like giving points and things like that. Like anything like that, he would rather give the point away than that's where his locker room reputation is good with the guys, which is why a lot of the guys like him.
Yeah. Andy Murray certainly, his friendship really speaks, for Nick.
I don't know, bad. I mean, Liesl Huber takes the cake on probably a couple of things. She had a double bounce at the Australian Open. Speaking of not calling it on yourself, that was all time against Vesnina and Mirza. I mean, people in the locker room are losing their minds.
That's the one that traveled around the internet after the Sigmund Mladenovic, that classic Liesl Huber double bounce.
Oh, it was a total double.
And Safarova just slams the ball down. Sonia Mirza is like losing her mind.
Oh, I've heard stories about her also at the French Open where a ball was out and she like totally showed a different mark. And, it was a huge point. She will definitely not go down as a good sport. There's no question about that. Like, just the bullshit she does. One player that has to be a little bit careful about what I've seen over the last little year, and I really like her as a player, and I think she's got such a big, bright future, is Katie McNally. Like, in doubles, she stands in the service line, like in the middle of the court.
Are you allowed to do that? Can you put your body in the recipient?
As long as you don't move when the player goes to serve, but then she moves away. But she's still doing those junior things. And,
junior.
Katie, if you're listening, you don't need to do that stuff. You're a great player. You're a very, very good doubles player. Like, you're going to win tournaments and grand slams in doubles, especially with Coco, the way you are as a team. You don't need to do that stuff. And it's just, it's bullshit. She actually, Nicole Melikart, hit her with a serve this year, or I don't know if it hit her or she went for her on a serve during the Cincinnati tournament. So went for her because she was like making.
You're
going to
be in the box. Yeah.
You know, that sort of stuff is just that's stuff that you do in juniors, which you shouldn't do in juniors. But you got to cut that stuff out. That's just stuff that is not okay. And and your reputation is going to precede you, and it's not good.
I want to end this by saying, as somebody who won way more sportsmanship awards than I won trophies of tournaments.
That's good for you, Kat.
Well, I mean, it's something. But I do think, like, I enjoy playing tennis, and I thankfully play with a bunch of people who are, like me, 20 years past their prime at best, and their prime wasn't even that good. But everybody's playing for the same reason, which is like, hey, I've just stolen an hour out of my day. I'm somewhere beautiful. I'm on the river yesterday playing at the 96th Street clay courts. And like, why would I spend the time using it to like lose my mind and cheat somebody? You know what I mean? Like, that's sort of for me.
Well, I would hope that the people out there that listen to our podcast that play casual tennis don't cheat ever. Because if you do, you really need to go to a psychologist.
Okay. If you're cheating and $1 million is not on
now,
the line,
now, if you're
at yourself in the mirror.
You can understand how players will cheat if it's going to affect the rest of their lives. I can see that to a certain degree. You know, we've all sort of had those moments. But all the pros out there, all the three that listen to our podcast, maybe a few more, don't cheat. Like, it's just your reputation that it will follow you everywhere. I mean, look at me. I'm still talking about players that I played against that have been retired for a number of years. And one of the things that I remember about them is how much they cheated. So don't be that person. Okay? Okay.
And that's it for this episode of the Racket Magazine podcast. Thanks for listening. Our host is Renee Stubbs. Our co-host and producer is me, Caitlin Thompson. Music by internationally renowned DJ Stretch Armstrong. Thanks to Tim Rogerian and the team at Acast. Find us at racketmag.com/podcast and subscribe to us at any of your favorite podcatchers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.